Hey, before we start this episode, just want to remind you that the Fearless Woman's Guide to Starting a Business is available everywhere that you like to buy books, and you can get it in paperback, Kindle, and even as an audiobook. I'll have links on where you can purchase in the podcast notes. Okay, back onto the show.
You are listening to One Broken Mom, a podcast dedicated to raising awareness about mental health, parenting, and self-improvement. I'm the host, Ami Quirconi. One Broken Mom is not a family show. It is intended for adults only and may contain adult language. Sometimes the topics are serious, but you can count on the episodes to be entertaining. Also, One Broken Mom is not offering any psychiatric or medical diagnosis. We're just here giving away useful and important information. So, if you're ready to hear real talk by real people so that we can all get better together, then you're in the right place, and welcome.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Last year, I had a chance to speak with my guest today, Dr. Rhonda Beeman, about resilience. And I wanted to come back to this conversation again, because I believe this is one of those subjects that you really just can't overtalk. There's, you know, not enough of us having the discussion about what it means to be resilient, to become resilient, strategies and techniques we can employ. And I had a chance after I spoke with Rhonda last summer and then published my episode on One Broken Mom to actually integrate part of her conversation into the book that I just published this year and in my chapter on Becoming Unstoppable. And so I thought it would be amazing to actually bring her back and focus more specifically on talking about unstoppable, not to mention she's super fun to talk to. And so it's always going to be a good time. And then this last year, she's actually published another book called My Feet in These Shoes, and it's a memoir, and she shares stories in there from other people and what it was like making decisions and changes in their life. And so, and what they decided to do with their, some of their dreams. And so I want a chance for her to be able to tell us about that. But first I want to say, welcome back, Rhonda. I'm really excited to see you.
It's good to be back with you. And especially I'm looking at you with no mask on. This is good news. This is happy. This is happiness happening in the world right now.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, it's been, you know, I have to say that for a year, and I know this has been a really hard year for a lot of people, so I am not diminishing or invalidating some of the really like gnarly experiences people have had. But, you know, these are those years where I feel like being able to ring out something positive, that's just what one of my superhero strengths have always been. And so in the last 12 months, you know, some really cool achievements have happened that I'm, you know, I'm proud of. And I know that, you know, every time I run into some sort of a hurdle, there's, you know, glass half full. What can I learn from this? How has your 12 months been since, you know, like I said, it's been about a year since you and I have actually talked.
Yeah, I have to laugh because, you know, I'm not even a half glass full or a half empty. I'm like, throw the glass away. just be, you know, let's not even measure it. Let's just keep moving forward. So I remember specifically saying to all of my students, all the people I teach fitness classes to, anyone that I would run into last March, I was going, come on, people, we can do this. It's 3 weeks. Hold on. Yeah, you know, it's okay. So I'm not a real good arbitrator of what's happening, but I'm still positive. And, you know, here's the thing. Throughout human history, these things have happened. I was reading, I'm just going to drop Marcus Aurelius on you to sound really smart. But I was reading his meditations and some of his history because the whole Stoic movement fascinates me. And, you know, how we've just recycled their thinking from a long time ago and just kind of updated it all along human history. But they were the original thinkers of these things. And it's fascinating to me, but during his reign, there was a 19-year pandemic, 19 years, and it killed something like 5 million people, which, you know, in today's numbers is like 50 million people. And, and so it goes through human history. And the people that end up, you know, okay, are the ones that understand it's not always going to be wonderful. And I really love this this two-thirds rule, or the rule of thirds, if you will, that I read the other day, that a third of life is great. It's just great. And I call it those golden moments, you know, whether it's your graduation or your wedding or something terrific. Life is great. For a third of your time, life is good. You know, it's not golden, but hey, I'm healthy. I've got a roof over my head, God willing. And, you know, life's pretty good. And then a third of it is really terrible, just bad and tough and filled with depths of sorrow and darkness. And when you hit those moments, and you will, I mean, if people are listening to you on your podcast and thinking you're always positive, that's probably not true. When people meet me, I think they think that I know my students think that I crawl into a coffin at night like a vampire, you know, and I just wait for the sun to come out, and then I'll come back and go, I'm teaching today, and then I go back, and it was what they think. But you know, I've got my one third of terrible stuff too. But when the one third of terrible stuff happens, what's really, really challenging, and what you can decide, like nobody else, only you, is holding on till when it gets good again, because it will. And holding on until it gets great again, because it will. And it's just this minor shift of your attitude. And I think that is the whole secret to everything. And the only thing that you can control, right? Not the circumstance, but your response to the circumstance. Not thinking something's good or bad, but thinking makes it so, right? So understanding mm-hmm. the kind of power you have. So mm-hmm. yeah, tough year for everyone. But also, like you said, some really great wake-up calls and some really great moments of understanding, some really fresh awakenings about where we're headed and how we get there and what's possible and what really matters and what matters most.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, you said good and bad, and that made me think of when you pop that in there, the tendency that we have to judge the experience and like rate it on a score. You know, yeah. on that spectrum of a good, great, or, you know, terrible experience. And I, you know, and I think like you that, when we start judging him in that way, we lose the ability, like, how can I learn something from a bad experience? Or is it, you know, and then you regret having them, or, you know, you don't learn enough from your good experiences, but what you're saying is don't really judge it based on good or bad. Pull out, it happened. It's a thing. It's an experience.
It happens. Yeah. You can't deny that. You can't like walk around going, I'm okay, because everyone knows you're not. And, but what are you pulling out of it? And what are you using? You know, I like the whole analogy. I'm getting into archery lately, and not because I needed to go hunting for my own food during the pandemic, but I just, it was something I could do in my backyard. And I like the idea of a quiver, right? The quiver is the thing that holds all these arrows, and these arrows are these things you pull out and take your target and shoot. And, you know, you either hit it or you miss it or whatever the case may be. But like everything that you learn and every experience that you have, good, bad, and ugly, every day that you are given, and do not forget, you are given this day, right? No promises that you'll be given tomorrow. Everything that you can gather is like these quiver, you know, these arrows in your quiver, and you've got tons of them if you start collecting, you know, every day with every opportunity. And you know, I really want to make sure that anyone listening understands, because, you know, I have students who their whole freshman year of college has been online, or their whole college graduation didn't happen, or, you know, there's all this loss. And they look at me, or they look at someone like you and think, well, it's easy for you, you know, because you're an optimist. Well, wait just a freaking minute, right? Nothing in your DNA makes you an optimist, makes you disciplined, makes you move forward instead of back. You choose ever better. You choose forward momentum. And everyone can do it. You know, it doesn't, it's just, again, that shift in your mind, and everyone could do it, but it's harder. It's so much easier to sit around and wallow and complain and criticize. Anyone can do that. That's easy, you mm-hmm. know, but being Go ahead.
I was going to say like you're, you know, I wanted to ask that because it's easy. I think you and I maybe make it look really easy to do, to make those choices. And, you know, and I sat and have contemplated on myself, like why me and how me, right? And like, maybe not why me, but how me, how am I this way? And I was going to ask, like, you know, you do leadership development and resilience development, you know, as a big part of your professional career, you know, are there people that seem to be born with an ability to be resilient or have it come at us easier than, you know, maybe other people? Because yes. I've seen people too, that are just like, you know, I frustratingly like, just, you know, don't look at it that way. Look at it this way. Yeah. And it's like, okay, yeah. Is that fair, you know, to everybody else?
Yeah. And you just want to slap them. It's like, you know, on Moonstruck, snap out of it. But some people cannot. You're absolutely right that there are some people who, you know, the more and more we're finding out about our own bodies and our own upbringings and all the human, you know, experience, the more we're finding out about that, you know, we realize we're just a big chemical cocktail. And some people got some really good chemicals and some people did not. And so there is that as a factor. But barring clinical issues, barring, you know, medically diagnosed issues, the normal person that isn't facing those kinds of challenges that have to do with chemical imbalances and drug use or abuse and those kinds of things, the normal average person, I guess you would say, not normal, none of us are normal, the average person, no matter what your chemical cocktail, can decide. I have a friend who's an MD, and he said that so many people come into his office that are pre-diabetic, type 2 diabetes, haven't been taking care of themselves, whatever the case may be, and, you know, overweight. And he says to them, listen, you know, if you go out and walk your block once or twice in evening, just a couple of times around the block, it'll do as much for you as this pill that I'm going to give you. And everyone takes the pill. Hmm. Everyone. She's never had anybody go, really? I could control it myself. Just give me the pill. And that happens too with depression many times. And so, you know, we've got this whole societal thing that some external solution is going to help us. And I really, you know, Goldie Hawn's doing a really great job. Jewel is doing a really great job on creating these programs that go into elementary school and start teaching people about, you know, mind, you know, your meditation skills and looking at the world as a positive place and, you know, all this. And I think it has to start because so many of us just replicate what we see at home, what we see, you know, in other people's homes or whatever, and, you know, never get the chance to really optimize who and what we are because we're not taught that stuff in school. You know, when I go into these corporations and I've got 40-year-old people who are sorry they picked the profession they did, are sad. You know, it's like, I think you and I talked about last time, you know, most people park their cars where they're going to work and leave the window down a little bit so their soul can breathe while they go into work. And gosh, what a shame. How do you fix that? Well, I think we got to go back to the very beginning about how people are educated about what we're capable of and what kind of, you know, chemicals we can call upon and that we create ourselves, the dopamine, the adrenaline, the endorphins, everything we need to live a positive, meaningful, and powerful life is already inside us. We just need to know how to tap into it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think about, you know, my drive that, you know, spurs me to get back up off the ground to do something is this partly competitive, you know, like I want to win. Well, that's a dopamine, like I want a reward. And I know I can't get rewarded if I sit on my butt and I do nothing. And so I get the, you know, the energetic, you know, refill of my battery, of my resilience.
Absolutely.
Battery comes from going after it, making it. If I don't make it, It hurts. I mean, I'm a human being, but yet I know that I process it on how I can do it better so that I can get it. And so I know that for me, that seems to be a part of that. Like, I'm built to be fueled by the dopamine and the reward system of, you know,
yeah.
Whether that's, and I, you know, I view that as like, that's me. And I know some people just aren't driven in that way. So there are differences out there. You know, I think one of the things we did talk about on the last time, and I would like to talk about it again, because I do structure it in my book quite a bit. And when we talk about resilience and abilities to have developed the skills early, and you already just touched on it, you know, that there are skill building activities that need to be shown to us as children and modeled and demonstrated for us. And I think one of the things that I had really taken when I was studying on teaching resilience to people was the power of the caring adult, you know, especially as a child, the person that made sure to reinforce in you that you mattered, and yet it was worth getting yourself back up again and trying again. And that being a really huge factor on maybe sometimes the difference between children who grow up with a little bit more of that grit and those that don't, maybe that could be a big factor. And I think you and I talked about this because you had said something like, for you, when I said, give me your tip on, you know, what's the best thing to build resilience? And you had said was find good people to surround yourself. In a year like we've had, is that still the best advice to give out there? I mean, would you go back to like, it's about a support system?
everything, right? Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what's the, you know, latest big popular research that's quoted everywhere? You become the five people that you hang out with the most. And, you know, what's so remarkable about being a human being is we're so, so adaptable that all it takes is one positive role model. That's all we need. We had one. And that's what's so great about being an educator, being an author, being a parent. You have a chance to be that one for somebody, to be that one that can turn a person's life around. So yeah, it's great to have five people that are your role models, but if you have one, and I know people who use, you know, people they don't even know, you know, so if you see Eric Weinmeier, and he's the blind guy that climbed Everest, and, you know, he climbed it totally blind with asthma to the very top, and you watch something like that happen, and for you can absorb that and go, look what we can do. Look what a human being can do. So it doesn't even have to be somebody you know, but you got to find somebody who has done something that you admire and you realize, wow, because I'm a big proponent of the idea that if one of us could do it, we could all do it. Mm-hmm. Within reason. I'm never going to play on the NBA. You know, that's not within reason. But I could climb Mount Everest if I really wanted to. You know, mm-hmm. Look at what Eric did. Or I could, you know, I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. So yeah, I think role modeling is, you know, critical to optimal human performance. To know what we're capable of doing and being able to see someone else do it. Team Hoyt, have you ever heard of them?
Mm-mm.
Team Hoyt, the dad just passed away, but their son was born with cerebral palsy. And the doctor said, you know, he will never have a normal life. You should just put him in an institution. And they weren't going to do that. And they brought him home and raised him like any other child. And, you know, they're just extraordinary people. But one day when he was in the sixth grade, he wanted to run. He wanted to run in a race. And by this time, he was already in a wheelchair. And the dad, who had never run before, was not an athlete, but he was powered by love, said, okay, let's go do this race. So he hooked up something and he pushed the wheelchair. And that was the beginning of over 35 marathons, something like 15 Ironman. I mean, throughout their whole lives together till the guy was almost 80. The dad was almost 80. He would pull the boat, you know, pull him in a wagon, bicycling in these marathon. Unbelievable. If you had asked him, do you think you can do that stuff? He might have gotten no. But powered mm-hmm. by love, powered by a goal, powered by, you know, look what just a normal guy could do. So again, all of us have that in us. We so rarely tap everything that's in us. And it's, you know, I don't know what the solution is, because it's not, I mean, if we had been talking to Ovid in 800 BC, he would be saying the same thing. We're capable of more, people. Let's change the education system. Let's change parenting, whatever it is, you know, so we can discover that. But we need to keep chipping away at it. That's for sure.
Yep. Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, it has made a difference in my life, and when you kind of look at success for other people, especially when it comes to like their professional lives and entrepreneurship, is, you know, not so much being attached to like the day-to-day metrics, but actually being attached to the possibilities and the vision, you know, and actually setting for yourself with the goal of whatever it is you're trying to do in your career, in your life, you know, with the business that you want to start, that it's taking you someplace. It's not just the thing you show up and do every day. And that once you really do believe in that future vision, you know, for me, it is, am I doing something today that's going to push that vision out further or let it slip away? And sometimes that thing that you have to do is, I got to get up and try something today. Like, I may not feel like it. I might need to give myself a break. That's a true thing. But if always taking an action, and I know we talked about this in the last one, you know, constantly taking a positive action, they don't have to be grand. Like, you don't have to go for Mount Everest, right? But every time a positive action is taken, it helps reinforce and strengthen that resilience muscle. And sometimes the anchor or the Mount Everest in our life is simply this vision for a sales goal or a target or a lifestyle that we want to be able to have, right?
Or getting out of bed during a pandemic when you feel like, oh man, what's happening to our planet? Get up. Put your shoes on, do what needs to be done for the kids, for the dog, you know, whatever it might be, and start moving forward. And all of a sudden you realize it feels better than laying there and feeling like I can't do anything, right? So yeah, it's the day by day, you know, life, like we talked about earlier in the broadcast, it's not the big moments, right? It's the everydayness. You know, most of it's good, some of it's bad, some of it's great, but it's the everydayness of being a champion of your own life, being a warrior, you know, having a quiver full of different kinds of arrows when you need them. And, you know, I love human beings. I don't paint, I don't sing, I don't dance, I don't have really any other talents, but people are like, you know, my canvas, my art. I could sit at an airport back when we could go to airports. I could sit at an airport and just watch people and think of their stories and, you know, make stories up. And I honestly believe most people are trying, but they just haven't had any, you know, real guidance or are unclear when you say the word vision. I mean, how many people sit down and go, what is my vision for my life? You know?
Yeah. And I've actually ever ran into people that don't think that way, you know, that I haven't. I'm surprised. Like I said, I think you and I are like, yeah, I would know what a vision is. But I remember doing a business meeting. And the question was, you know, what do you see for yourself in 12 months? And, you know, it was like two out of the three people in the room don't even think that way. They don't even process life. They're like, and I'm like,
crickets,
no plans?
Crickets, right? Crickets.
Like, you don't set visions for yourself. And it's just like, I just get up. I don't think those people though are the entrepreneurs that'll be listening to the show and thinking about that, but they are in our companies though, right?
Well, that's the thing. You might be a great entrepreneur, but unless you can find a lot of people that, you know, join that bandwagon with you and give it their best, you're going to be struggling, right? So how do you get people to do that? So,
yeah. Now, when we talk about resilience, I know the tendency is to focus is on the building, right? Like, how do we add to it and patch things on to make it stronger and stronger? But, you know, one of the questions that I thought about today was sometimes our resilience actually gets undermined. It gets some things get taken away from it that begin like a hidden danger or something like that. Is there any vampires out there that you think people should be aware of that actually undermines our resilience and pokes holes in it that we may not see coming for us?
Well, it's so interesting because there's, you know, everybody's talking about gaslighting right now, you know, being gaslighted. And that's certainly one of them, because you know, when there's this, you know, clandestine underneath the surface minimizing of your contributions and your talent or your ideas or whatever the case may be, it would be a fairly spectacular feat not to get in the car on your way home and go, are they right? Mm-hmm. You know, am I the things, you know, because they're planting the seed to make you think that. So, you know, I think that there are, you know, do you know what a water bug is?
Are you talking about the skimmers?
Yeah. The big, like they go under the water and they're like this big dark thing. These water bugs. Okay.
No.
So these water bugs, hang with me on this one. There's a point. Okay. these water bugs, you know, like if you're sitting by a lake and you see this big black round thing go up to a like lily pad where a frog is. And if you watch, all of a sudden that frog starts to like get smaller. And it's like a watching a basketball deflate, you know, it just gets smaller and smaller. And then it's like skin starts to droop and you're like, my God, what is happening? And a water bug has these two, you know, things that they stick into their prey and they suck all their intestines and insides out. So they were deflating. That's how they kill. And that's how they feed. And that's how they eat. I am telling you, there are water bugs of life everywhere that want to get their little stingers into you, especially if you make yourself a target by being optimistic, resilient, let's go team. There are water bugs who cannot take it, and they're going to do everything they can do to suck the marrow out of you, right? And so vampires is a very good description. I use water bug because it's just sucking the life out of you. And it's so easy to look at somebody like you or like me. You know, we're blonde, we're optimistic, and just count us as dumb. You know, count us as, oh, well, they don't know what's going on. And, you know, question our intelligence. And I would argue, and I do argue, that it's so much more difficult to look at things that are going wrong, things that need work, things that are a little less than what we would want them to be, and say, I think they can be fixed, though. I think, you know, if we get together and think this through, we could make it better. That's where intelligence lies. Anyone can say things are terrible, things are bad, you know, awful, awful. That's the pessimist, and that they think they're so smart. So, you know, when you always are trying to find the silver lining in the, you know, in the mud and gray cloud, people can discount you. And it's difficult to be the cheerleader. It's difficult to be the leader. It's difficult to say, you know, come on team, and be the one that everybody relies on for that. It's a heavy load. But man, how do you want to live your life? You get to decide. Do you want to be that person or the person that just, you know, has given up? Climbers, campers, or quitters, right? Mm-hmm. So, you're going to have things taken away from you all along. The older you get, then it becomes your mobility. Then it becomes your eyesight. Then it becomes your, you know, whatever it might be. It's a gentle process of, you know, degradation and minuses. And yet, have you met these, you know, older people who are 80, 90 years old and just thrilled with the way they live their lives, thrilled that they get a birthday cake with 100 candles on it, even they can't see it and all that kind of thing? That's the goal. That's the whole point of being here for as short as we are. So, you know, I think if you can choose resilience, choose optimism, choose being unstoppable, it's that mental attitude again, why would you not choose it? And why would you not find another champion to pair up with you? Some friend, some colleague, somebody that goes, let's max out our life together. I mean, mm-hmm. Why would you not do that? Why would you not do that?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think for some people, you know, again, if they have found themselves in some of the emotional traps that come with that, that can slow you down and have a hard time seeing, you know, the positive sides, which is, it's fair. You know, there are people that have had experiences and this, and have been in communities or families or workplaces where, like you had said, even the most strong of us, if we're gaslit or undermined or whatever, it does wear on confidence because we're just human beings. Yeah. And so when somebody had more of those people in their life, it can be a little bit more difficult to try to see the upside. You get too many bad lessons that, you know, that people are going to let you down, or, you know, or it's never going to go your way, or you get the feeling of cursed. And, you know, sometimes, you know, if that's you, if you're listening to this, like you feel that way, you know, just getting somebody with you who doesn't see the world that way will help in starting to shift your viewpoint, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I was not born this way. I mean, I was born into a difficult household. I was born to a difficult, very critical dad. My sister just passed away last year from alcoholism, just drank herself to death. My brother is a recovering drug addict who's been in federal prison. You know, I'm speaking from a place of knowing that you can look at what you were given and go, I want more. I mm-hmm. want better. I want different. You can do that. And the reason I know that is because I did it. And if I can do it with, again, no particular talents, no Herculean, you know, strength, no, you know, I'm just a normal human being who just really wants my little trip on the planet to be as good as it can be. And, you know, if I can do this thing, then anyone can do it. You just have to, here's the whole crux of it, I think. You have to believe you're worth it. Mm-hmm. You have to believe that you're worth having a happy life, having, you know, the things in your life that you want. You have to believe that you're worth fighting for. And that's what resilience is. You know, that you're worth fighting for. And so many people let the judgment of others or their backgrounds or whatever it might be make them think that they're not worth that. And, you know, once you can look in the mirror and really look at yourself and go, I love you. You I like. Once mm-hmm. you can do that, everything else starts to fall into place. Mm-hmm. You know, because you're going to treat that person that you love, that person that you like, that happens to be you, you're going to treat that person as well as you can. And, you know, I don't know what the key or the secret is, you know, how we're going to do this in schools for all the people, like you mentioned, who don't have great role models, who don't have opportunities, who don't have the golden ticket. You know, how do you do it for a normal kid sitting there 6 years old whose parents are, you know, drug addicts and who are, there's shootings going on outside their doors? And how do you do that for a kid? Mm-hmm. Man, you know, those are some of the issues that I'm starting to work on and tackle, because if we can do that early, you know, we won't even need to talk about how a person becomes resilient, you know. As an entrepreneur, we'll have so many ideas and entrepreneurs and stuff going on in the world and problems being solved that, you know, it'll be a whole new golden age for the human race.
Yeah, that would be, I mean, and that's kind of for people in the sphere, in the space, right? Like that's the goal, right? Is break it as early as possible, you know, stop the momentum, you know, that as soon as you can. Intervention in a child's life, the sooner the better. You know, one of the things is, and I've talked about this on, you know, the shows, is like trauma-informed schools, because sometimes the parents' capacity is limited to be able to do that through their own trauma experiences. And, you know, as I've sat in the last year and, you know, and have reshaped, you know, my direction's always been the same, but how to get there has been, you know, evolving in the last 12 months, you know, through the pandemic and through other, a lot of other things. My focus has turned towards the workplace environment, because I also see that to me, as being a parent and knowing how much, you know, a positive work culture, a trauma sensitive work environment building resilience through the leadership in a company that actually trickles through every employee. And then an employee then takes that home with them. And it's good that they're taking home with them, not the stress, the strain, the bullying, the compound of everything that happened to them, and then venting it out to their family. Because if the kid goes and has a great teacher, but comes home to a mom or a dad who has been, you know, bullied or put down, or something's happened at work, or has too much going on and nobody there recognizing that they're overwhelmed, you know, it all pushes at some point. And I think that there's this, to me, this is my complex brain going, I think there's everybody at different places. And, you know, and I think that, you know, organizations to a large extent need to be more accountable through their leadership towards the type of cultures, not just good work cultures, but actually trauma sensitive cultures, to know that work doesn't just end at the threshold at the office. It goes home, and home comes into work, and there's this perviousness between those two, you know, that barrier is not a brick wall.
Yeah. Yes, you're right. And it, you know, it's when we first started our company Peak Learning, that was one of the things that we realized was if you can inoculate, if you will, there's a lot of words like inoculate going on around right now, but if you can inoculate the main artery of, you know, civilization, which is business, mm-hmm. which is, you know, building, which is, you know, creating. If you can inoculate there, so let's say we can't get them at 6 years old yet, and now they're in companies, and you're sitting in Deloitte in a big 14-story building or 40-story building in San Francisco, you can do something into the main vein of Deloitte that helps everyone become, like you said, more resilient, more unstoppable, more excited about their own potential in life. If you can create that in a company and throughout companies in the world, now you're changing, you know, the engine. Now you're changing the engine. And is it possible? Sure. Hell yeah, it's possible. Mm-hmm. You know, but you just got to get out there. And I think inoculating is a really good word for it, because you are giving them the antibodies. You are giving them the, you know, fighting cells to get out there and make their, have you heard this one? It's like the father gets yelled at work. Have you heard this one?
Oh, no, go ahead. I mean, I know this story. Father gets yelled at work. I know where that's going to go.
Father gets yelled at work, comes home and yells at the mother. The mother yells at the kid kicks the dog. The dog barks at the cat. The cat wheezes on the carpet. That is how it goes down through everybody's house, right? Mm-hmm. If you can stop that dad coming home or the mom coming home and yelling and being unhappy and thwarted, then no pee on the rug, so to speak. Mm-hmm. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And now that makes me... what makes me want to ask, you know, we talk about building a resilient person and becoming resilient ourselves, but how do you do that with an organization with a diversity? You know, what are some of the challenges that are there? Because I think, you know, there are companies that want to have resilient companies. You know, what is a resilient company, you know, versus a resilient person, given all the parts and pieces that are moving around?
Right. Well, you know, I have a bias. First of all, have you noticed how everything is resilient now? You have resilient shampoo.
Yes.
You have resilient couches and beds and
deodorant,
furniture. Yeah, everything's resilient now. But when we started Peak Learning, it really, the word resilience had only been added to buildings, you know, mm-hmm. to whether something could stand and stand the storms, stand the, you know, assaults and all that kind of stuff. And you know, what our particular goals and beliefs are is, and we created this technology it's based on cognitive therapy. So if you circle back the way we started this broadcast, you know, this attitude shift, this cognitive thought pattern, most people are just replicating what they saw at home. So if your mother fell apart when something bad happened, guess what your propensity is going to be? Fall mm-hmm. apart. But if you can retrain that, and so there's a whole process that goes with that, but if you can, and you can do this, you can, and so we call it adversity quotient. You can actually change someone. You can't change their IQ, but you can change their AQ in an afternoon. And then, if they start practicing that, they start teaching it, like you said, to their kids, to their spouse, to the people on their team. And we've seen whole companies inoculated, if you will, with high AQs, and sales numbers go up, absenteeism goes down, health problems decrease, on and on and on and on, because we rewired what they thought was hardwired patterns of behavior, but that actually can be rewired in a day or two to help people become more resilient. Will it solve all the problems? No. Will it solve everybody's problems? No. But it's a beginning. It's mm-hmm. a place that people can learn about their own brain and how their brain works, and how, to tap into what's an incredible amount of power with that little attitude shift again. So,
mm-hmm. And for people that are listening, if you want to hear more about it, I do know you and I talked about that, and you broke down the core method in the last interview. So that everybody that wants to get more into that, pop over to the other interview that Rhonda and I did last season, and you can get into it. And then I actually did also talk about that, because it's been a very popular model written about that you guys developed to do it. And so I included that as an example in the book as one of those ways of being able to do it. Cause it's a thought shift process. And I know you and I are the worst spokespeople for it, only in the sense that we demonstrate it, but we make it look like it's just so easy. And so I think we both can agree that, like, there's consciousness. And I think that's one of the things that I tell people is, there's a mindfulness that's so different. I don't just go with the flow. When something jumps up in the road and it knocks me down, there's a I feel it. I let it happen. It sucks. I go through all of that, but then I make the conscious step, or, maybe it's a decision in the morning. Maybe it's the next morning. Maybe it's in 3 days. I don't know what it is, but then there is the, okay, I'm ready now. Like, I've felt it. I understood, but I'm not just ready. What am I going to do next? And that's a sentence that you have to, utter to yourself to do. And, being resilient doesn't mean that you're not affected by, the crap that happens to you. Uh-uh. It's the next step you do after you feel the feelings, the anger, the, madness, the grief, whatever the feeling may be that, knocks you down a little bit. But you come up with the, up for air, and you're ready to paddle back to the shore or whatever it is that you want to do. And I think some people think that you have to be tough, and resilience isn't tough. It's like, I think we talked about in the last episode, it's actually the ability to kind of be flexible, like to Absolutely. Take the shot and bounce it back.
What did they say on Oliver? Please, sir, could I have some more? But I think you made a really important point in that, again, we're not superhuman. We're not robots. We do have feelings, and it may take, depending on what it is, and everybody's adversity is different, right? Mm-hmm. Someone could have, just be wiped out by the fact that their computer crashed, whereas somebody else, it's the death of a loved one, and it's not ours to judge what someone else's adversity is or the severity of it. But sometimes, you've got to give yourself some time to heal, and you're not just going to automatically go, my friend was just put in the hospital with botulism and she may die. Oh, well, I'm going to explain to myself why this is going to be. You can't do that. So you've got to sit down and lay down and think and process. And there is no time limit. If it takes you a year, it takes you a year. But the important part, I think, like you said, is what's next now? I've healed, I've understood, I've processed, and I'm kind of tired of staying in this dark place. What's next, and how do I get there? That's the resilient part. Mm-hmm. It's not that you just go, boom, I'm better. No.
Right. Right. And I think that makes resilience for people that have struggled with it. That explanation I think is important, because it makes it show just it is more achievable than maybe you think that it is. That it isn't, it's not measured by the quickness at which you do it. It's measured by the fact that you do.
It's not speed dating.
Well, so now I want to give you a chance to talk about your new book that just published this year, My Feet's in These Shoes. And you have such the best titles, because your other book is Little Miss Merit Badge, which I totally love. So tell me about this book that you did and where it came from and what can people expect when they read through it.
Oh, you're very nice to bring it up. My feet. So it's FEATS. Everybody who's in, broadcast land that can't see it. It's my feet in these shoes. So the things that I accomplished or tried or didn't accomplish, as the case may be, and the different shoes I wore that got me there. Shoes are like the first adult machine we're actually given, to operate. And so from baby shoes on through, I kind of go through some of the stories because so many of my university students are always asking me, how do I get a life like yours? And I'm like, you don't want a life like mine. You want your optimal life. How do you do that? So at the end of every chapter, so it's a memoir, but it's also like an inspirational guide because at the end of every chapter, I have a little section called Put Yourself in My Shoes. And it's the distillation of the lesson, of this thing that anyone can take from this experience that I had and shared and turn it into their own, life and their own thoughts and their own processes. So I'm really proud of it because I've tried to meld, this is what I know, and this is how it could help you. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, as an educator, I think that the educators of the worlds are great because you're able to take the book and actually turn it into, the application, right? So, teaching isn't just the standing up and talking at people. You need to be able to come up, synthesize it in a way and give people an opportunity to learn from it. Otherwise, you're just
Yeah, otherwise, what's the
doing all
point?
this. Right,
What's the point?
exactly. What
I
is the
had
point?
this, you were talking about visions, and I had this little statement up on top of my computer the whole time I was writing that said, use your life to illuminate others. And that's the whole point, because if you're not doing that, it's just kind of a exercise in self-aggrandizement or something. And now a little bit more about me. Okay, no. So I think that that's important. I mean, that's what I get from reading other people's biographies and memoirs and stuff is like we were talking about. Sometimes your role models aren't ever going to be people that you meet, but you can learn from another person's life and what they went through and that kind of thing. So I'm excited about it. And it comes
Cool.
out May 25th, and
Oh.
I'm going to be speaking at the Publishers Weekly's book National Book Fair, but it's virtual. But I'm sharing the speaking honors with
No
Oprah.
way. That is awesome. No wonder your students are just like, how do I get your life?
Yeah, but I think that, I'm probably making Oprah really nervous. Oh, I'm on with Rhonda. Oh, yeah, that's what she's saying. All right.
Oh my gosh. Well, that's awesome. Congratulations. And so by the time anybody's listening to this episode, the book will be out. So you guys will be able to
Yes,
grab a
it'll
copy
be
and
on
read it.
Amazon and all that kind of good stuff.
All the
So
things. Will there be an audiobook version of it?
we're working on that. I hope so.
Okay.
That would be really fun. I've never done one of those, and I would really enjoy doing that. So,
Yeah. They ended up doing one of my book, and my editor had pitched me to do the narrating because I podcast and
perfect,
mic and stuff, but
perfect.
it didn't happen that way. So they hired a I know, and it was like, oh, and but they hired this woman Megan Tessing, who is a professional narrator, and though it is so surreal to listen to my words come out of someone else's mouth, but she's also an actress, and so she reads it just like exactly the way it needs to be read, like the right inflections.
Oh,
And I'm just like, okay, that was the right call. That was pretty cool. I mean, I would like to narrate a book at some point, but I am not disappointed in how well the
Oh,
audiobook turned out.
good,
Like it
good,
is
good,
really,
good.
it's really fun. So.
Well, I'll remember that if I get lucky enough to get an audiobook and because I think, oh, I would like to read it, but maybe it'll be better if somebody else does. So
Yeah, I was like all about that ego. Like, yeah, no, I totally need to read my own words. It can't come out of someone else's mouth. And then, but again, it's like the surrealness of hearing something you said. It almost doesn't feel like your own words when somebody else reads them. And so I've been re listening to my own book, and the first time I think the first section of it, I cried. Like I just was blown away
Oh,
by the experience of it. I was just
that's
like,
so
wow,
great. That's
yeah.
so great. And it's a very good book. I have read it. It's a good book. So everyone should get your book, and then when they're finished, they should go get my book. And
Yes.
there it
Awesome. Well, this has been exactly the conversation I was hoping I was going to have with you. So I enjoy you so much. you know, I feel so grateful, you know, that I reached out to you last year and got a chance to be able to talk with you and, you know, and to be connected with you and everything that you do. I mean, you're, you know, the positive energy that you have, the intelligence that you bring to the subject, and the inspiration is just, you know, off the charts. And so I like talking to you about this because then when people are searching for somebody to be inspired by, like, you are one of those people to add into
and
it.
Vice versa, aww, girlfriend. Thank you so much. I was anticipating this and enjoyed it just as much as I thought I would. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to One Broken Mom. You can find podcast notes on my website at amiequiracone.com. And there I'll provide all links to all of the resources that we mentioned on the episode. Also, if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for other episodes, feel free to send me an email. And if you are interested in sponsoring the show, I'd love to have you be a part of the team. Finally, if you like what you hear, please share the podcast and leave a review so that others can find it. We are all here to get better together. I am the host, Ami Quiracone, and as always, I am super grateful to have you as a listener. Until next time, have a great day.